Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Women's Health. I'm Bonnie Mason for the Virginia Voice. I'll be reading from the Harvard Women's Health Watch, a publication from Harvard Medical School. This is Volume 31, Number 8, April 2024 edition. The first article is entitled Building Blocks. Women's protein needs change at different stages of life. Are you getting enough? Dietitian Nancy Oliveira has noticed a theme among midlife women who are distressed at having gained weight. They blame menopause. But while hormone shifts may play a small role, Oliveira points out a surprising contributor to these women's weight woes. They often aren't prioritizing protein in their diets. Since protein is at the heart of muscle growth and maintenance, skimping on this powerhouse nutrient can sabotage women's well-being. Indeed, every bodily function relies on protein, from building muscle and bone to producing blood, digesting food, and fighting off infections. Every cell in your body is made of proteins. Your organs, muscle tissue, bones, and immune cells, explains Oliveira, manager of the Nutrition and Wellness Service at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. I do think some women are eating mostly carbs and feeling tired. They're not protein deficient, but could be mildly low in protein. Weight gain can follow. We look at menopause as a marker, but it may be that women are losing more muscle mass around perimenopause, and muscle maintains a healthy metabolism, Oliveira says. Protein primer. Protein is one of the three macronutrients that we need in large amounts. The others are fat and carbohydrates. Protein requirements aren't based on sex, but on age, body size, activity level, and overall health. How much do you need? Get out your calculator. The U.S. government's recommended dietary allowance, or RDA, is 0.8 grams per kilogram, or 2.2 pounds. Of body weight. But that amount is a bit low, Harvard experts say. Instead, aim to consume between 1.2 and 2.0 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. The RDA is based on the minimum amount you need to prevent disease, Oliveira says. That doesn't mean it's all you actually need, because protein needs can go up for various reasons. For a healthy 150-pound person, that means eating between 80 and 136 grams of protein each day. People do well with round numbers, says Mary Ellen Kelly, a dietitian at Brigham and Women's Hospital. If someone is 150 pounds, they need at least 90 grams of protein a day, with some variability. When women need more. Despite sex-neutral protein requirements, women may need more for certain reasons. Men don't. These include pregnancy and breastfeeding, when growing and nourishing another human requires an especially rich supply of the nutrient. Research is also beginning to illuminate that women are more prone to insulin resistance as years pass, when cells in our muscles, fat, and liver aren't as sensitive to insulin's blood sugar regulating effects, Kelly says. Because of this, older women should shift up protein and fat intake and eat fewer carbohydrates. Our body's ability to metabolize carbohydrates begins to change as we age, says Kelly. The answer is not to drastically reduce calories, but to fuel yourself adequately by eating more protein and unsaturated fat, and less heavily processed carbohydrates. As with men, women who are competitive athletes or trying to build muscle should also opt for higher amounts of protein. And for both sexes, aging alone increases protein needs as we become more vulnerable to diminishing muscle mass and bone-thinning osteoporosis, which strikes 4 times more older women than men. After age 40, we naturally start losing muscle and need to eat more protein to preserve that muscle, Oliveira says. Consistent but flexible. Though it's ideal to keep protein intake consistent day to day, it won't hurt if you occasionally end up eating, say, 60 grams one day and 160 grams the next. We don't want people to get caught up on eating the exact number of grams of protein on a daily basis, Oliveira says. That can bring some anxiety. But try to spread your protein intake throughout the day to keep your body humming. Aim for 25 to 30 grams of protein at each meal, and at least 10 grams at each snack, Kelly advises. Most people manage to eat enough protein without stringent measuring, Oliveira notes. It's absolutely about your overall eating pattern, she says. Learn what the protein-rich foods are and try to include some at every meal and snack. And then you don't have to worry so much about how much and what size. I do think you'll consume enough if you're mindful about it. If you don't, your body may protest. Symptoms can include muscle loss, persistent hunger, fatigue or weakness, moodiness, dry, flaky skin, brittle or damaged nails, slow wound healing, and frequent or prolonged illness. You may be more susceptible to colds and other viruses because your immune system is down, Oliveira says. Supplement basics. If you're aware your protein intake could use a boost, whether you don't like to cook, have a poor appetite, or eat a fully plant-based diet, it's fine to use protein supplements or powders to fill the gap, Harvard experts say. Widely available protein shakes, meal replacement bars, and other commercial products make this an easy option. But don't rely on prepared versions too often, since many are ultra-processed with a lot of added sugar, salt, and preservatives. They're also lacking naturally occurring fiber, vitamins, and minerals, Oliveira says. Want to whip up your own protein shakes? It's wise to know what you're putting in them. Whey or casein-based protein powders, which are isolated from cow's milk, contain animal-based proteins, while pea, hemp, or rice protein powders are plant-based. And since dietary supplements aren't tightly regulated by the USDA or FDA, Kelly advises verifying that any protein supplements are labeled NSF certified for sport, which means they've met certain quality standards. But aim to get the vast majority of your protein from whole foods. They're called supplements for a reason. They supplement the diet, Kelly says. And people who get enough protein from their food don't need to take in more through supplements. Just use them as needed. A morning protein shake is fine, adds Oliveira. I find them to be really helpful on days where you can't eat enough protein. They can be useful as a tool to add to your diet. That concludes the article, Building Blocks. There is a related, smaller article to this particular article, and it's entitled, Look to These Foods to Meet Your Protein Needs. Ask people where to find protein, and they're likely to answer, meat. While that's true, it's also rich in poultry, fish, dairy products, and plant-based foods such as grains, nuts, seeds, beans, and other legumes, vegetables, and tofu, and other soy-based items. Protein molecules are composed of smaller elements called amino acids, which support just about everything our bodies do. We produce some amino acids ourselves, but need to get the rest from our diet. These are called essential amino acids. Animal protein is known as a complete protein because it contains all 9 essential amino acids. With a few exceptions, plant protein usually doesn't. I don't think people realize there are actually some plant foods that are considered complete proteins, such as soy foods, hemp seeds, and quinoa, says Nancy Oliveira, manager of the Nutrition and Wellness Service at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Vegetarians who don't want to eat animal flesh can definitely get enough protein from plants, but you do have to be mindful about it to get those foods more regularly. But animal products aren't the only foods people find polarizing. The choice to consume dairy is probably the biggest debate, says Mary Ellen Kelly, a dietitian at Brigham and Women's. But dairy can definitely provide high-quality protein, whether in milk, Greek yogurt, or cheese. If you want to add up your daily protein intake, the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and USDA offer guidance on protein amounts in a smattering of common choices. Broiled sirloin steak, 4 ounces, 33 grams. Grilled sockeye salmon, 4 ounces, 30 grams. Skinless chicken thigh, 4 ounces, 28 grams. Ham steak, 4 ounces, 22 grams. Cooked lentils, 1 cup, 18 grams. Plain Greek yogurt, 6 ounces, 17 grams. Cottage cheese, 1/2 cup, 14 grams. Cow's milk, 8 ounces, 8 grams. Cooked beans, 1/2 cup, 8 grams. Cooked pasta, 1 cup, 8 grams. Unsalted dry roasted almonds, 1 ounce, 6 grams. And 1 egg, 6 grams. And that's the end of the article. Look to these foods to meet your protein needs. Next is a section called Research We're Watching. The first article is entitled Toothbrushing Tied to Lower Pneumonia in Hospital Patients. Seriously ill hospitalized patients whose teeth are brushed at least twice daily are far less likely to develop pneumonia, the most common hospital-acquired infection, a new analysis suggests. The study, published online December 18, 2023, by JAMA Internal Medicine, reviewed 15 earlier analyses involving a total of nearly 2,800 patients. 14 studies were conducted in hospital intensive care units, or ICUs, while 13 involved patients on ventilators. Patients whose teeth were brushed twice or more daily were 33% less likely to develop hospital-acquired pneumonia than those without a toothbrushing regimen. Patients whose teeth were brushed also needed ventilators for less time, were able to leave the ICU more quickly, and were less likely to die in the ICU than those without a toothbrushing regimen. Since hospital-acquired pneumonia, which kills more people than any other healthcare-associated infection, is largely due to inhaling germs from the mouth and throat, toothbrushing may reduce its incidence by eradicating some of those germs, study authors said. And the next article is entitled, Eating High-Quality Carbohydrates May Stave Off Middle-Age Weight Gain, hoping to avoid middle-age weight gain? Steer clear of low-quality carbohydrates and starchy vegetables such as peas, corn, and potatoes, a new Harvard-led study suggests. The study, published online September 27, 2023, by the BMJ, evaluated weight changes in 136,432 adults, 65 or younger, average age 50, 83.5% women, who were tracked for up to 28 years. Although participants gained an average of more than 3 pounds every 4 years, the quality of carbohydrates they ate appeared to play a role in weight control. A daily increase of 3.5 ounces of low-quality carbohydrates, such as sugar-sweetened drinks, refined grains, and starchy vegetables, was associated with gaining up to 3 pounds over a 4-year period. But an increase of just 1/3 of an ounce of fiber in participants' daily diets was linked with gaining 1.7 fewer pounds over 4 years. The associations were especially strong in women and in people with excess body weight. While consuming too much sugar is unhealthy, refined carbohydrates such as white pasta, white bread, white rice, and chips appeared more problematic, contributing even more to middle-age weight gain, study authors said. And the last article in the Research We're Watching section is entitled, Night Owls May Face Higher Diabetes Risks. Women who are night owls have a higher risk of developing diabetes and are more likely to practice unhealthful lifestyle habits compared with early birds, a new analysis suggests. In the Harvard-led study, published online September 12, 2023, by Annals of Internal Medicine, researchers tracked nearly 64,000 female nurses, ages 45 to 62, over 8 years. The women had no history of cancer, cardiovascular disease, or diabetes. Participants reported lifestyle behaviors that included diet quality, physical activity, alcohol use, body mass index, smoking, and sleep habits. They also reported whether they were diagnosed with diabetes. Women who fit an evening chronotype, preferring to stay up and wake later, were 19% more likely to develop diabetes than those with a morning chronotype, who prefer to go to bed and wake up earlier. Additionally, night owls were 54% more likely than early birds to report unhealthy lifestyle behaviors, such as smoking and poor sleep habits. Earlier research has also suggested that shorter or irregular sleep is linked with a higher risk of diabetes, the study authors noted. They theorized that circadian misalignment, being a night owl, for example, but also working early morning shifts, which is common in nursing, could disrupt the body's ability to properly process sugar. And that concludes the section Research We're Watching. That also is the end of the Harvard Women's Health Watch Bulletin, Volume 31, Number 8, April 2024. Next, I'll be reading from the Women's Health Advisor. This is a magazine published by Weill Cornell Medicine, Iris Cantor Women's Health Center. This one is Volume 28, Number 4, the April 2024 edition. First up is the Editor-in-Chief's column. It's by Orly R. Ettingen, MD. She is the Editor-in-Chief. And it's entitled, How to Cope with Chronic Pain. Living with chronic pain, especially if it's severe, can deeply affect your feelings and mood. Studies have found that older women experiencing pain are more likely to feel anxious, sad, or depressed. If you are dealing with the emotional side of chronic pain, or have in the past, it's important to know that feeling this way doesn't make you unusual, overly sensitive, or weak. It's a common and understandable reaction to dealing with ongoing physical discomfort and the challenges it brings. Even though we know that pain can strongly impact emotional well-being, treating the patient's physical symptoms tend to get the lion's share of our attention, and mental health can get overlooked. But it's crucial to recognize that stress can make chronic pain worse, and chronic pain can increase stress levels. The mind and body are connected, so taking care of emotional health can make a positive difference in managing pain. There are several therapies that can help manage the emotional side of chronic pain, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, biofeedback, and mindfulness meditation. CBT focuses on recognizing and changing thought patterns, enabling you to approach challenges in a more constructive manner. In biofeedback, we use special sensors to keep track of things like a patient's heart rate and breathing. This information helps us see how little changes, like relaxing one's muscles or taking controlled breaths, can affect the body. Mindfulness meditation is a valuable tool that can positively impact your mental well-being when dealing with chronic pain. Through focused attention on the present moment, mindfulness can help you develop a healthier relationship with pain-related thoughts and emotions. If you think your mental health is suffering as a result of dealing with chronic pain, talk to your physician about finding a therapist who can introduce you to one of the therapeutic techniques discussed here. I always remind my patients who are dealing with chronic pain that depending on their condition, some degrees of pain may be inevitable, but suffering is optional. I encourage anyone dealing with chronic pain to explore mindfulness meditation, biofeedback, or CBT as a complementary approach to help put some space between your pain and your emotional response to it. And that concludes the Editor-in-Chief's column. Next is an article entitled, Cataract Surgery Can Help You Regain Crisp, Vibrant Vision. Replacing the eye's aging, cloudy lens with an artificial lens can help you recapture the vision of your younger days. At some point during your 50s or 60s, your vision may have lost some of its vibrancy. Even when you're wearing prescription eyeglasses, things began to be a bit blurry, hazy, or less colorful. This is what it feels like to have a cataract, which is the term for what occurs when the lens in the eye becomes clouded, a natural process that occurs with age. The role of the lens is to help you focus on objects at varying distances, close up for things like reading and knitting, distance for activities like driving and golf, and mid-range for everything in between. If cataracts are detected early, at stage 1 or 2, you'll have some time before surgery is necessary. But if cataracts have developed or ripened to stage 3 or 4, where they affect your ability to drive, read, or work, it's time for cataract surgery. Safe surgery. Cataracts affect more than 25 million Americans, 61% of whom are women, and cataract surgery is among the most frequently performed and safest surgeries worldwide. Cataract surgery involves removal of the clouded lens and replacement with a clear artificial intraocular lens, or IOL. This is done as an outpatient procedure that takes less than 30 minutes, and in most instances is covered by Medicare and most private insurance. Today, cataract surgery is safe in more than 95% of patients, says Anna Alzaga Fernandez, MD, assistant professor of ophthalmology at Weill Cornell Medicine. Standard IOL versus premium IOL. In most cases, a monofocal IOL is used to replace the clouded lens. This is the standard lens that has been successfully implanted for decades and is 100% covered by Medicare and private insurance. The monofocal IOL is designed to provide the best possible vision at one distance. Most people who choose a monofocal IOL have it set for distance vision, and they use reading glasses for near vision tasks, such as reading and crafts. In some instances, however, patients decide to have the IOL set for near vision, so they don't need glasses for reading. In those cases, the patient is fit for prescription eyeglasses for driving and other activities that require distance vision, explains Dr. Fernandez. There are also advanced IOLs, known as premium IOLs. While premium IOLs aim to reduce dependence on glasses after cataract surgery, the extent to which that occurs varies from patient to patient. They are more expensive than monofocal IOLs and are rarely covered by insurance. Examples of premium IOLs include multifocal IOLs, which enable near and distance vision, and the light adjustable lens, LAL, which allows for the prescription of the lens to be tweaked after the eye heals. The healing process can microscopically change the patient's vision prescription, and this lens gives the surgeon the ability to compensate for that. The surgeon uses ultraviolet light to adjust the lens strength during a post-operative office visit. Sometimes more than one visit is necessary to get the strength just right. How cataract surgery is performed. In most cases, the patient receives a mild sedative that is administered intravenously along with numbing eye drops. The intravenous medication allows for the patient to feel more at ease while still remaining awake and able to follow directions during surgery, explains Dr. Fernandez. The surgeon makes a tiny incision in the eye and then inserts the phacoemulsification probe, which uses ultrasound vibrations to break the clouded lens into small pieces and suction to remove the fragments. Once the fragments are gone, the surgeon implants the IOL. A newer surgery technique, femtosecond laser-assisted cataract surgery, or FLACS, uses a laser to perform several of the surgery steps, but the surgeon still uses the phacoemulsification probe to remove the pieces of the cataract. Enhanced precision and reduced healing time are two possible benefits associated with FLACS, but studies show there is no advantage as far as visual outcome. Also, FLACS is not covered 100% by Medicare or private insurance. Restoring youthful vision. Cataract surgery is a highly effective procedure that can make everyday activities easier and safer by restoring the visual function that you enjoyed in your younger years. An annual eye exam can help your ophthalmologist diagnose your cataract early, which will give you the option to wait and schedule the procedure when you are ready to have it. And that's the end of the article, Cataract Surgery Can Help You Regain Crisp, Vibrant Vision. I know a lot of you out there have significant vision issues, and I hope that that article provided some insightfulness for you. Overall, I hope that you enjoyed this week's edition of Women's Health, and I thank you for listening. This is Bonnie Mason for the Virginia Voice.